Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and this week it was announced that Earl Hebner is being inducted to the TNA Hall of Fame, taking his place alongside the Johnsons, Cheeks, the Barbed Wire Christmas Tree, a Sons of Anarchy box set, and Ric Flair's Dignity. On the bright side, I hear we can get you a great deal on a Hall of Fame t-shirt.
I'm G. John Chase, and I was going to do another one of those Hulk Hogan racist jokes, but I just decided, what's really the point? He just gets away with everything these days. There's no point trying to convict him or make him accountable for anything he does. Hulk Hogan, the Houdini of the justice system.
Hi, I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and the morning after last week's Hulk Hogan trial, Kyle texts Liam to tell him that he regretted the decision and for going along with my train of thought. I will admit this is the first time a man has regretted going along with something I suggested the night before. Marvellous.
And I'm Carl Jones, and you might remember me from such shows as Women's Wrestling, The Atmosphere Killer, Glory Hole, The Jim Barnett Story, and No Hookers on the Streets, The Fall of Mid-South Wrestling.
This is the panel for the 55th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear our show debating which wrestlers were better faces or heels next. Everyone, and welcome to the 55th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Kieran O'Rourke
at Wrestling Profit,
G. John Chase,
Volva,
and Carl Jones
at Old Man Jones 85.
Oh, for God's sake. We are back this week.
You say that, Liam, but why are we doing this show today?
Well, we're doing this show today, Kieran. Very seamless transition, lovely segue there, because we have had a couple of requests from you, our loyal listeners, for this show. Today we're taking eight tremendous talents and debating whether they were better as faces or heels throughout the course of their career, taking into account their in-ring work, their work as characters, personalities, the runs they had, and it came at the suggestion of Timar, at Not An LL Cool J Fan on Twitter.
That is correct.
And as well as Arrogantly Grateful from WrestlingForum.com, who suggested this a couple of weeks ago as well. So if we are nothing else but a podcast for the people, so we're doing this today. Eight different guys we're going to talk about. We of course have plenty of feedback from you on your takes, an immense amount of feedback as a matter of fact, and we're going to get to it throughout the course of the show. But we're going to kick off right now. The first guy on this list that we're going to talk about, the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah,
I know that you're a big homer for MG. It's going to be an interesting one to talk about around the table. Savage, face or heel?
What did you say? Homer.
Homer.
Okay. Yes. ER.
But yeah, throw this one. Throw this one out to the forum. Face or heel, what do you guys prefer him as? Which one do you think he's better as?
It was a tricky one, just because obviously as a Savage fan, I just love everything he does. So like, I'll kind of go either way. So by personal preference, I will go with heel. That's the Savage I first saw. I think like a lot of his babyface work is great. You know, just for me personally, I think it's definitely his heel runs more. I mean, you can talk about WCW and him being involved in the NWO. Did some great work there, particularly with DDP. But I'm just going to focus mainly on the Macho King. It was that time period of him that I just adored. It was that version of Savage that I first started watching that drew me to him, culminated in the WrestleMania 7 match with Warrior. Just the whole character. This is when like Savage really went really out there as far as Savage could go in just terms of how crazy he was. I mean, we've laughed before about Rumble 91. Where he does the run in on the Ultimate Warrior Slaughter match, and he's just legging it around like a madman. He's just absolutely fantastic. His work rate's always going to be the same. Always prefer to see him when he's in control more than anything. But from a character perspective and like promos, I always thought he did the vast majority of his best work as a heel.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with Chase as well, heel. But the period really stands out was at Memphis.
Yeah, well, this is what I was gonna say.
When
too.
He was like, man, he's just this ball of energy, absolute fucking beast of a heel, and he's
a superstar, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, that was like, retrospectively watching that period, it's like, god damn, this guy was fucking insanely awesome as a heel. So that's the period I'm gonna go that really stands out for me for Savage.
I'm gonna say the same. I think pre that big babyface turn in 87-88, that's for me the peak period of Savage. So that's the kind of the era that I look back on when I think of Savage at his best. Is that run where, obviously, like you mentioned, in Memphis, the matches with Lawler, which I absolutely love. Yeah, the Loser Leaves Memphis match is great. As well as just like his run as the Intercontinental Champion, I think is the best run that there's ever been. The matches with Santana, obviously ended with the match with Steamboat, but there was just so much good stuff that Savage did through the course of his career. As a character, I prefer that period of Savage too. Macho King got a little bit into the realms of WWF Hoke a little bit for me. So I kind of prefer him in his pure unfiltered form, it seems like. Yeah, the interplay with Elizabeth and stuff like that too, where he would always, you know, he would hide behind her and stuff like that. To your point, G, I love Savage in control of a match. He seems to throw a lot more punches as a heel, which I love Savage's punches. He's got that great baseball swing style that, you know, where he would kick the left foot out before he brings the overhand right, which is just fantastic. Yeah. There's a magnetism to Savage when he's around it. And he would do it a lot, that kind of heel stooging that you see where, and Carl, you don't like Larry Zbyszko for this, but Randy Savage did it fantastically, where he would always bail to the floor and just walk around the ring, engage the fans. He would be tremendous, and he would just work them up into a frenzy before he really even does that much. And it's the little subtle tricks where he had that element of a great territorial heel, but just played into a bigger, larger-than-life package, and it was just sensational. So for me, Savage is a worker. As a babyface, I do like as well. I think he's a fantastic seller. I think he was able to draw people in. But is this one of the ones we're probably going to see this as a recurring theme, where he was such a magnetic personality as a heel that you just couldn't help but love the guy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably the underlying thing for me in terms of his two babyface runs is that whilst, as you said, he was superb at selling and so on, he was a very popular babyface both times, he was always going to be like one step below Hogan. Like, he was always kind of like the second run guy. I'm thinking mainly of the Mega Powers at that point, where he, even though he was the champion, he was like the second guy to Hogan, so he was the guy that was taking the beatings, so Hogan could get the hot tag and so on. So he always comes second tier, whilst at least when he was a heel, he could be like the top heel. As you said, it's just, when it comes from a character perspective, it's just always going to be a heel. I think you will find with most people, not necessarily everyone on this list, but with most people, there's obviously a lot more creative freedom as a heel. You can kind of like throw a lot more stuff. Obviously, you're trying to get people to boo you, but there's a lot more throwing things against the wall to see what kind of, you know, how you develop the character. And you can see that with Savage. Savage feels a lot more kind of expressive and kind of just can do what he wants. And when Savage can do what he wants, that's when he's at his best. And I think Liam, you actually pointed on a very key part of like his heel run. I mean, as I said, I personally went with Macho King, but I agree with you guys as well. I'm not going to argue too much on his Memphis run or his IC title run. One of the key aspects of him being a heel was Miss Elizabeth, because once he was babyface, the Miss Elizabeth thing was kind of more just a plot device for him, as in terms of just you know, for the heels to get heat on. Whilst when he was a heel himself, it was a great storyline that they built over many years. And as you said, like the little instances that he would use Elizabeth to protect himself, or whether it's just like, I'm thinking randomly, George Animal Steel, like going after her or something like that. Just she was like an extra byproduct of that heel run that they could use, which added just more intensity to Savage. Just the great little things, like anytime, if I remember right, I think Gene Oakland is like interviewing him and tries to get a word in for Elizabeth, he would just butt in or move in front of the camera as she's talking and stuff. Like, he's always has to be the center of attention and so on. Yeah. And it was just great interplay between this demure kind of woman and this over the top, in your face personality. It was a superb character.
Yeah, it's a testament to Savage too that even though he won, I mean, he was a very hot heel as Intercontinental Champion, that the fact that he was with Liz was still over massively as a babyface, it didn't take away any of the sheen from Savage as a heel by association either. Carl, keen to get your thoughts on here, face or heel for Randy Savage?
See, when I think about Savage and I think about the outlandish character that he was, and I mean that in a positive way, I didn't see, you can reference the hiding behind Liz and things such as that, which are all perfectly true, but in terms of real change in characteristics, I didn't see that much of a change from babyface to heel, really. Some words may change, language may change, but in terms of the character, I thought it was very much the same in regards to his WWF run. But my personal preference, really, would actually probably come after what you'd consider his peak, and after the Macho King run, because I wasn't as big a fan on that. To your point, Liam, I think it was a bit too hokey, let's say, and I always didn't really feel that Savage needed Sherry Martel for anything. So I'm going to go with his babyface runs, and I'm going to go specifically because I always loved his programs with Flair.
Yeah,
I always loved his programs with Flair, and that's what sort of draws me in. You know, she was mine before she was yours, and you got Savage to play in many respects, still play up that sort of the egotistical, domineering male in the sense of, you know, flipping things around rather than hiding behind Liz, wanting to protect Liz and, you know, defend her honor and that sort of thing. I just thought that was absolutely fantastic. So I've always erred more on the face side when it comes to Savage. I mean, I don't think his in-ring style changed too drastically either.
This still is still hot dog a lot, still in a different vein.
Yeah, And his selling, as you say, is the baby face in peril.
Oh, it's great.
I think it's a trait that's often overlooked with Savage. I don't think people talk about it often enough.
And I will just add here that when I was a young footballer in school and I was encouraged to take a dive to try and get a free kick from time to time, the two people I emulated when I would take a dive and sell was Shawn Michaels and Randy Savage, because I would always take the bump like Shawn, at least I thought I did, and then I would sell like Savage. I put the arms over the head without the hands touching the head, because I guess as a kid I just thought, well, that's how you'd look if you were hurt, because Randy Savage does it that way, and I believe that. So,
and I always got a although it didn't do well at the box office, let's say, I was a big fan of his feud in the fall of 91 into 92 with Jake. Yeah. I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
But yeah, I always think, when I think of the babyface run, at least around the 91-92, I always think of that post match promo from WrestleMania 8. Where he's hobbled into the back and he's with Elizabeth, and he hasn't got the shades on this time, which he usually did have when he was cutting the promos, and he's just staring at the camera as he's talking about how he's, even though he's won the title, he's still coming after Flair. And it's just like that. This is always the thing that I just love about Savage, is just the intensity of everything that he does, whether it's babyface or heel. In a babyface role, when you're looking at him and he's looking at the camera saying, "I'm coming after you, Flair, no matter what," you generally believe, just like, man, Flair's fucked with the wrong guy here. Like, this guy's gonna fucking come after him because he's crazy enough to do it. You know, he may have won the belt, but it's not over for him yet.
The thing that I've got, it's not necessarily I've got against him, because again, he was great, but at the same time, after a while, maybe after after he lost the WWF title the second time in 92, Savage, I don't know, as a babyface, he almost came off like most of the time he was kind of a caricature of himself, of what he once was, kind of a thing. He had his formula and he was just going to go with it forever, kind of a thing, and it was only in extenuating circumstances when he changed it.
See, I'd agree with that, and maybe that's kind of part of the reason. I never really had a lot of sympathy for him as the babyface character. It was a character that didn't really resonate to me, and it's that image of his bald head, maybe. I don't know. And it was something, as you say, kind of a caricature of a guy from the past, kind of thing. And
yeah, I just remember we did the Monday Night War timeline a few weeks ago. We were talking about that one or two promos he did right before Halloween Havoc 96 with Hogan, where Hogan had used Liz as emotional blackmail to try and get to Savage. And Savage, again, to your point, G, had the glasses off, and you could see in his eyes how much it emotionally wrecked him. And it was like, this is something, as a baby face, we can get into. A different Randy Savage. This could be really good. I don't think anyone's going to give him any points for the what up match period. A very brief baby face run there in 99 before they went heel with him again. But
no, definitely not. Just to your point there, because I found it interesting that you referenced after he'd lost the belt the second time, and the possibility of him appearing as somewhat of a caricature at that stage. Could that be a reflection on the fact that a lot of the other larger-than-life characters were falling by the wayside, like Warrior, like Hogan, and so you had talent such as Michaels and Bret Hart coming more to the fore, much more sort of, even Shawn at that point, more placid characters? So is it a reflection in that sense, possibly? Or am I going a bit too cerebral for that?
No, but I think at the same time, I think that doesn't go so well when you think about, I think he was the same in WCW when he got there, and like, he was surrounded by the Hogan and the Zodiac and the Dungeon and all this malarkey, but at the same time the run with Flair in WCW 2 was really good. So again, it's not saying that there was no positives here, I'm just saying that it came out far less frequently as time went on for Savage as a babyface. Whereas as a heel, I thought he always brought his A game. Moving on here to your feedback, we have 3 votes for heel and 1 for babyface around this table. Harmonic Generator from the UK fan forum says, "Babyface. It's the music, the costumes, the entrance. You just can't help but want to cheer him. And he was part of the greatest feel-good moment in history when he turned face again at Mania 7. Lockjaw from TPWW also says, "Face. Dude was just so over the top and full of energy that you wanted to love him. Who didn't want to root for Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth?" Line of the Midlands from the UK fan forum says, "Heel. Because he has those one eye looking at the mantelpiece, one eye looking at the fire eyes. He looks like a crazy bastard. Throw in a bedazzled jacket that even a country and western singer would say was over the top, and a promo style that screams one sandwich short of a picnic, and you have one of the greatest crazy heels to step foot in the ring." Subatomic Elbow from Pro Wrestling Only says, "I prefer Savage as a cocky face to Savage as a cocky heel. He's one of the few guys who was able to transition that part of his heel persona that fans reacted to over to his face character." Scott Malbrank from the UK fan forum says, "This one's a real cunt for me, because I loved him as if he were a babyface when he was a heel, and hated him like he were a heel when he was a babyface." The Brain Follower from Pro Wrestling Only says, "I feel like Savage is really the only one here where it's even a tough decision for me. Savage clearly drew more money as a heel, but that was against Hogan and Lawler in Memphis. He did great work against Steamboat, Santana, and DDP also as a heel. His matches tend to be slightly less formulaic is a heel as well. So I'll go heel, but he was great in either role. Jackpot from the UK fan forum says he was an excellent babyface. His selling and high-flying offense automatically gets fans on their feet. His colourful clobber and personality would win fans over too. But his heel work was just as good. He genuinely looked like a mad bastard at times. With Macho Man, it really is a toss of a coin, in my opinion. And Air Raid from the UK fan forum also says this is a tough one. In the ring, Randy was a remarkable babyface, convincing me at times with his selling that he was actually getting the shit kicked out of him. Some of the Flair matches in particular, I feared he would never walk again. Actually, especially the, you mentioned Mania 8, but the one where Flair gets the belt back, August 92, and where he passes out to the pain. That's a great job there from Savage. Back to Air Raid. Have to say, I thought he was an even better heel with a versatile range between his crazy, jealous, treating Liz like shit 80s prime and his Kingdom of Madness run with Sherry, where he was equally as batshit crazy, but often with a subtle comedic twist. Between the Ropes, however, I always think one of his most commanding performances was at Spring Stampede with DDP, a dynamic, compelling performance as a completely unhinged menace to anyone who comes near him, but manages to not overshadow DDP in the latter's big breakthrough match. His psychotic behaviour just underlines how tough Paige must be to knock him off. So a lot of varying thoughts here, and a lot of people saying that this was a very difficult one to choose. Was there any kind of trepidation or second guessing around the table when you kind of came to your own conclusions?
It's a close one, just because he was, to me, so good in both roles.
Yeah, as I said at the start, like it was a close one for me, but I had to go with basically what made me interested in him, what drew
me
to.
What your heart tells you.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, his heart tells him in his erection.
What my erection told me, and that was heel.
One that was a little bit more polarizing to one that certainly isn't. The Nature Boy Ric Flair is next on the list. Line of the Midlands from the UK fan forum says, a man who could get heel heat if he was wrestling in Antarctica in winter, wrestling a block of ice. A man who sets the standard for the fuck you, I'm better than all of you heel. We may have all grown up wanting to be that limo riding, jet flying, Rolex wearing, styling and profiling son of a gun, but in our hearts we knew he was better than us and we hated him for it. Add in his gang of horsemen and we hated him even more. Wishbone from TPWW says, does this really need explanation? Ric Flair is the heel of pro wrestling. No one does it better. He's got the persona down perfectly, and even his look screams, I'm a douchebag and I'm better than you, what are you going to do about it? Laz from Pro Wrestling Only says, Ric Flair may be a god, but he's a vengeful, spiteful shit heel of a god. He's a heel more because you know you'll never achieve what he has, no matter how hard you work. He knows it too, and he won't stop reminding you. Derek R. Hubbard from F4W says, in addition to his promos and characters, Flair's in-ring wrestling style was centered around him being a cheating and cowering heel. Flair's heel tactics were so excellent they became central to his babyface act during the latter stages of his career. Peach Chaos from Pro Wrestling Only also says, Flair is both James Bond and the Bond villain, and everything he ever did was pretty great, but I like him best as the heel NWA touring champion. Seaford from Wrestling Forum says, as the arrogant, rich, Tom Brady-esque heel champion, who is just simply better than everyone else but cheats occasionally, not because he needs to, but merely for fun, this is the true version of Flair. Noid from TPWW also continues this trend. This is the easiest one for me to answer. 100% heel. Flair was, in many ways, the definitive heel. The tailor-made suits, the Rolex, the shoes that cost more than your house. He'd rub your face in it too. He was credible and you wanted to be him, but you'd pay good money to see that smugness humbled. On the flip side of all of these votes for heel, Jerry Von Kramer from Pro Wrestling Only says, this appears straightforward, right? Rick's a heel, yeah? I actually think it's more complicated. Starcade 83 and 93 both demonstrate that he excels in the role of the babyface ace. Fans in the Carolinas loved him even when he was booked as a heel. Even though he was a heel, he had so much charisma that men secretly wanted to be him and women wanted to shag him. The Horsemen were cool and always had their pockets of fans and were always over when booked as faces. Flair was audibly cheered versus Garvin in 87, Steamboat in 89, and even Hogan in 94. Realistically, since about 98, it's been difficult to present him as a heel. His best runs in terms of actually getting over as a heel were probably the 91-92 WWF run and the 95-96 WCW run. As I've said before, Flair was at his most evil in 96. Because of all of that, I actually vote face for Flair, even though his character is a heel. So an interesting one there, and it's actually a take that I quite like, because I agree, as great as Flair is, and as iconic as Flair is, Flair as a babyface, man, he's incredible. He's great, sympathetic babyface.
Don't get me wrong, he is, and in particular the 83 Starcade and the 93 Starcade,
yeah, which
Vader.
Is the Flair show from start to finish.
Absolutely,
Flair show. And he's great in all those segments with Gene
at Flair's home in the limo with Flair, which I'm sure,
the last match talk. It's so good.
Yeah, it's great stuff, and I don't wish to denigrate Flair's face work at all. Yes, okay, there are sections of the audience that gravitated to him. But he still, for all intents and purposes, was a heel. He didn't try to act like he wanted the fans, you know, respect or love. I'm going to use Bray Wyatt as an example here, which may seem strange, but the way in which he will play up to the fans, the Fireflies and all that nonsense. Whereas Flair never did that. Even if fans cheered him, you know, he wasn't acknowledging that. He wasn't embracing it. He still was an out and out heel.
A prick.
Yeah, a complete dick. And I'm with the rest of the emailers on that one. For me, it's as much as I think his face work is very good, for me it's an easy decision that it's heel.
Yeah, same for me. The only thing I'd really add to what the people have said and what Carl said, he's world class, amazing worker, but the face persona is almost a result of the grandiose nature of the heel character in the legendary search from being this unbelievably successful douchebag heel. So even considering that, I'd still go yes, still heel, more because of that. It's like that set him up to be this legendary, the reaction to it kind of thing. So it's heel for me. As you say, quintessential heel, could get his ass kicked, make guys look fantastic, and I think as a long term value to a company, that was always his MO more than the babyface chasing. So
Would it be much of a leap to say, and maybe this is just an over-analytical way of thinking about this, but Flair, after a while, did become fairly patterned as a heel. You knew the routine in terms of what Flair was going to do, where he was going. But at the same time, I think what stands out to people, especially as a babyface, and does to me too, is that Flair as a babyface was forced out of his comfort zone at times, like Vader, like Terry Funk in 89, where you got to see a different side of Ric Flair. And I think that's kind of, we know Flair's great as a heel, and that's so established and so entrenched that when we see these exceptions to the rule, which typically came as a babyface because of the nature of Flair's style and his career, those things do imprint in your memory quite easily.
So it highlights more.
Yeah. And I think it's, when people think about great Flair moments, obviously it's like, okay, the fact that he's one of the best heels of all time and these great individual moments that typically did come with Flair as a babyface in many cases.
Heel Ric Flair is fantastic.
Oh, it's glorious.
As I stated when we were doing the 50th show and they were talking to us about who do we see as champions, I stated that Ric Flair is the textbook definition of a heel champion. That's what it's all about. It's a guy who's snidey guy in the suit, the yuppie, right, in the 80s.
Ashley Schaefer.
Yeah, in the 80s. Well, who's spending money. He's treading on the lower people, so to say, lower people's lives, taking money out of their hands, essentially holding the power, which is the title, and then not only to have that power but then gloat about it, rub it in your face, show about his $1,000 shoes, his silk tie, his Rolex and whatever, and he would rub it in your face, and he was fantastic at that, and it was really cool as well for like that kind of subculture classic persona that he built his entire career around. And it's a shame that there's a lot of people today or in the last like 10 years that really should have taken more note of how Ric Flair carried himself,
yeah. Seth Rollins,
as a champion.
Directed at you.
Yeah, absolutely. Of how you carry yourself as a champion. It's a last art, and Flair was the master of it. Saying that, I adore babyface Ric.
Yeah.
I adore him. And the more I watch it, the more I love it. And it's because when Flair's being a babyface, there's a lot more of those moments where you see a little bit of real Ric in there somewhere. And you've mentioned 93, Starcade with the angle with Vader and stuff. But Great American Bash, 89, where he's just wrestled Terry Funk and he cuts that promo again. And it's just Ric Flair. Like, when Ric Flair's, like, you know, being the conglomerate, like, asshole, that's great. But when Ric Flair's being the bastion of just, like, pro wrestling, you know, he's just saying, like, with the NWO angle as well, where he's just there saying, like, I don't like where this is going, I'm going to hold the torch for what's right about wrestling, and I'm going to fight for the company, I'm going to fight for the business, I'm going to fight for the belt, whatever, to keep it straight. That's what always drew me to babyface Flair. And just also, crazy Ric is just always great. It's like, fire me, I'm already fired, you know, whatever. Just any time he loses it, and he's just shouting at the screen. These little moments throughout his career where outside, like where he kind of breaks the kayfabe a little bit and he gets emotional. I'm thinking of Arn Anderson's retirement speech. Those little moments where kind of Flair, you can see kind of Flair's getting emotional and stuff. It's like when I see like Flair getting emotional, I kind of get a little emotional myself as well, because I'm seeing like it means something to Ric. And so if it means
something,
the man cries at everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've just got to say quickly, whilst I appreciate the way in which you've articulated your viewpoint there, one thing you said stuck in my mind. as a babyface seeing sort of the real Ric Flair. Heel Ric Flair was the real Ric Flair. He lived the fucking character.
He lived the lifestyle of the character, but it's more just like his love for professional wrestling. Whilst like Slick Rick was kind of using professional wrestling to kind of like get the power and so on. When it was more babyface, it was just more like his love for professional wrestling. And those little moments where he is getting emotional, it's, I found it really hard pressed not to get emotional with him because it kind of means a lot to Rick. So in a strange way, it means a lot to me as well because it means so much to Rick. So I've always bought more into babyface Rick. However dastardly the heel is, you know that in his day, Flair was even worse. And you know that he can get his own back on him.
That was my point. My point is that for me, some of the elements of making a great babyface are born out of what it was as a heel. So there, for me, the heel trumps it automatically. Not automatically, that's a bullshit thing to say. But it's just it's something I bear in mind as the overall arcing what is Ric Flair. And those... the face elements come out of what he was as a heel in the longevity.
With notable exceptions and some of them which we've mentioned, I do prefer Flair in the ring as a heel. I think that him commanding the ring is far more interesting to watch than Flair actually selling and fighting from underneath. Even though he's very good at it, I just prefer Flair working in a circle as he always does and just takes the advantage, and then when making the comeback, then he goes for the leg. And he did layer his match as well. And when you can have matches with guys like Lex Luger at the level that he had, man, this guy's fucking brilliant in this role. He is as exceptional as a heel. And he had countless of them down the line. So, yeah, I'll vote for heel here. As much as I do like babyface Rick, I think in the ring, the Steamboat Series, the Wyndham matches, stuff like that, there's not much argument for me.
92 Rumble.
92 Rumble, which is just great. There's plenty of them. Even great Dusty, sport. Just like the rivalry with Dusty, where he was just so good. He was just perfect. Moving on here to a character that's very, very similar, I feel. The Rock is next on the list. In terms of the fact that he was so damn good as a heel that people eventually loved him and drew a great emotional affinity towards him. As a character in the ring, do you think he was better as a face or a heel?
Heel. Heel, 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 heel. Babyface Rock is great, but it's always going to be heel Rock. I'm always crying out for more heel Rock, because like, just from when I first saw him at SummerSlam 98, it's that character, it's that version of the Rock that drew me to him. The prick who will take his elbow pad bar, run the ropes just to do an elbow drop. That asshole. The one who would, you know, as you said, like Jerry Lawler at WrestleMania 14, will hold the title up, even though he's won by technicality or you know, reverse. Yeah, that guy is great. And there's so many sections of his heel run which I love, whether it's in the Nation of Domination with the IC title, whether it's in the Corporation where you can see he's really getting his feet under the table in terms of what the character is and really kind of exploring where he can go with it. I'm mainly thinking of the I Quit match for Mankind. Just like the improv he'll do on the mic or whatever when he's like singing before he hits Foley with the bell. What the one where I just saw, like, if you can't see that this guy not only is best as a heel, but just that this guy is the most charismatic person that's ever done wrestling, I'm thinking of the 2003 Hollywood Rock run, which...
It didn't draw any money,
no. But just from like a character perspective, was just fucking hilarious. Like, as soon as he came back, because I was begging for heel Rock to come back, and I just remember when he did at No Way Out in 2003, where he's going to face Hogan again, and he just walks out and the music's different. He's got more elaborate kind of music now with like the intro and so on. He's just like, he went back to corporate rock again. All the little stuff that he was doing, like he was goading Austin with the guitar as well, as Austin's getting escorted out of the building. When Rock's the heel, it's the same as Savage. He can let loose. He doesn't have to worry about the people like basically copying his lines or whatever. He can just concentrate on being the Rock, and that's when he's at his best, is when he's got full freedom.
As a character, I think a lot of people would probably be inclined to agree. Here's something to throw across the room. As a worker, I think he's a bad babyface.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. I mean, this run is probably one of my top two toughest ones for me.
Yeah?
I mean, he's so fucking charismatic as a heel. I mean, he's charismatic as a heel or face. And he has a lot more fun as a heel. But he's so fucking charismatic. It's like, he's a face when he's a heel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, how long? Yeah, when he was in the Nation, we were crying for him to be a babyface. Yeah. He was briefly. He goes back to the Corporation. We're crying for him to be a babyface once again so we can cheer him. He is the babyface. He gets his big, long run. Comes back as a heel, and he's so wildly entertained that people are cheering him over the people that we're supposed to hate and we're supposed to love.
I think the fact he's so... he is more fun as a heel. Better worker as a face. So overall,
I mean, with Rock, the work really does take a second, takes a back seat to a degree. Personally, I just always wanted to be able to cheer Rock. I wanted Rock to love me too. He's the fucking greatest man on the planet. So
and that great, and then, you know, that's one of the great things about Rock, similar to what, you know, somebody said earlier on about Savage. But I mean, he did keep a lot of those heel characteristics as a babyface. It wasn't like you couldn't cheer for him.
Yeah,
because
I was
you loved
say,
him before.
He's one of the few guys who is the cool heel who remained cool when he went face, because so many faces become so. The things they can't do, as you said about Savage, it's the babyface constraints. Rock was still able to work around them, and
as a counterpoint to Flair, who we said, you know, as a babyface had to kind of drop a little bit of that over the topness to be a little bit more, you know, show a little bit more of the real Ric Flair, as you said earlier on. Rock didn't really. he just kept on being the Rock.
He's always a I think it's kind of maybe it's you put a disclaimer that he's always a face anyway. Even when he's a heel, it's just. You know, how is he positioned to have the fun? The overwhelming charisma, I think he's a face, come on. He's the biggest face on the fucking planet.
Even as a baby face, the character is still, by and large, kind of a dick.
I even think it's kind of.
But he's an entertaining dick. my thinking's a lot along similar lines as Kieran's, really, in the sense that and to an extent G's, in the sense that the character I find a bit more enjoyable as a heel. Just because whenever I think about babyface Rock and promos, I'd say more so 2000, 2001, that sort of period, where there was something about his promos that I want to say almost grated on me a little bit. You know, the abundance of catchphrases, you know, things like "Who in the blue hell are you?" and things that I never kind of gravitated towards, frankly.
Now he's being a hipster.
I will take that criticism.
The world's oldest hipster.
A hipster with no hips.
But in terms of his work in the ring, to me, that's where the 180 comes. He's such a better worker to me as a babyface. He does the sort of the babyface in peril very well. Fighting from underneath and the
great facial expressions.
Yeah, and the fighting from underneath and the comeback are all massive character traits for him in the ring. Again, I think it's a bit of a difficult one, but I would just side on the babyface side on this one.
Yeah, it's like you mentioned, Rock's comebacks there. Even when he's saying everything about the Rock is just completely larger than life, and I think that's why I enjoy more as a babyface. Where even as a heel, and he's very commanding in the ring as a heel. Don't get me wrong, and he's great with the interplay and stuff like that, and he's very much the star of the match. It feels like when he's the heel, but as a babyface, when he just gets to, he's awesome at putting other guys over. He's very shameless about the fact that he can put guys over very well and still protect himself. Because he's got this just inherent thing where he can just be selling, and it just projects completely, far more than the vast majority of people in the history of wrestling, I think, where he can just do something and it's there, and everyone can understand it, everyone can see it. He's just fantastic and a very underrated worker as a babyface, I feel, personally.
I'd say he's better as a babyface, but personally I prefer him as a heel, just because I always got more enjoyment from him from that. I agree with you in ring-wise, but from a character standpoint, I just love the freedom that Rock had. I'm the kind of almost masochistic fan where, like, I want to hear him I want him to hear me cheer him, but then I want him to tell me to know my role and shut my mouth. Okay, I don't want him to like the fact I'm cheering him. I'm kind of like that kind of version of Rock.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the funny thing about a show like this, actually. And there was somebody, and I forget unfortunately who it was, that said that isn't just like the perfect show to do for the internet crowd, who's probably just going to say heel, because everybody loves the heels more anyway. Right now, if you're going to like do some kind of like fantasy draft for all-time baby faces, Rock's like top three for anyone ever. It's pretty hard to argue, I think. Moving on to the feedback here to see what you guys thought on this divide. Peach Chaos from Pro Wrestling Only said, "Corporate Champ in 1999 was his best work all around. He was sort of an updated Flair character in many ways, with the added twist that maybe he was completely full of shit." Gorgeous Dale Newstead from TPWW says, "His most interesting feuds were as a heel. He seemed to bring the best out of his opponents when fully fledged healing on them. Low blows, personal attacks, cheating and lying his way through victory after victory." Retep Adam from WrestlingForum.com says, "This one could honestly go either way. However, not only was he one of the hottest baby faces in the history of the business, but every time he'd turn heel, fans would eventually turn him face anyway because he was too goddamn entertaining." Lecter Yo from Wrestling Forum says, "Probably the best face in the history of wrestling, but goddamn, he was so much more entertaining as a full-on heel. Beating the shit out of Mankind for a living, insulting the crowd, refusing to let them sing along with him. My only complaint is that he should have lasted longer." I was good at the period where he's just like, "This is not sing along," and of course the fans are always chanting with the added catchphrase. Like, this guy just knows that he can do anything he wants. Yeah. HBKWWF69, which might be Kieran's username, M4W, says the whole Rock persona is a heel character. He's so full of himself that he refers to himself in the third person. How much of a dick do you have to be to do that? He was just so good at playing the role that the fans started turning him babyface. Even as a babyface, he still did all those heel mannerisms, get the same heel promos, and still referred to himself in the third person.
Yeah, but... yeah, how much of a dick do you have to be to do that? But how fucking great of a man do you have to be to everyone wish you were his friend? Best preface ever.
King Lobos from Wrestling Forum says the Rock character was created to be a heel. Simple as that. Nation Rock was the most hated guy in all of wrestling from both promotions. The Rock's best... I don't know about that one. The Rock's best babyface run was mid-1990-2001, which was arguably the greatest in the babyface category. Nation Rock was better, Corporate Heel Rock was better, and Hollywood Rock was better. His three heel runs were all fantastic and outweigh his one epic babyface run, at least in my eyes. Drax Spago from UK Fan Forum says Hollywood Rock was ace, but 2000 Rock against probably the best heel ever in Triple H means Rock's better as a face. Just had every city going mental for him for about 18 months till the movie career took off. Air Raid from UK Fan Forum says Rock is a baby face for me. As much as his behaviour is heelish practically 98% of the time, seriously, he's an utter cunt, he'll always be a superhero good guy when the bell rings. I'll be honest, characterised, I did love Hollywood Rock the most, but when he inherited the mantle of top baby from the injured Stone Cold, he leaped into the top tier of guys that me and all my friends wanted to see winning. His matches were always laid out better for me when he was the hero. His punches in the corner with spitting into his palm, grabbing the quick spine buster to set up the elbow, he was so explosive. It just worked better when he had to sell for the heel that went off like a Catherine wheel. He was such a non-stop entertainer with his trash talking and mimicking his opponent during the match that even when his character was a total prick, I found it impossible not to love him from bell to bell. A lot of divide again in the feedback.
You guys went face.
Everybody's going babyface apart from G sticking with the heel.
I'm sticking with the heel.
In his leathers.
I will say, I find it interesting that a lot of the emails.
Easy big fella.
Yeah. I'm going to say. Heel Rock is just a vehicle for him to be more of a babyface.
Yeah, it is. Every time.
He's not a wrestling heel. He's a face, man.
I think it's interesting that the emailers have picked up on the same sort of traits that we have around the table, in the sense of we acknowledge that the character is by and large a prick. But when it comes to the in-ring stuff, that's where he excels as the babyface. I just find it interesting that there's that sort of symmetry, let's say, between ourselves and the emails.
He's the sort of prick we all wish we could be, or want to be at very least, you know, in terms of just, like, he's a prick that gets away with it.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about him. This was his heel babyface. It was just the fact that he could get away with anything.
Prick that gets away with it, a bit like Hulk Hogan.
A little bit, but then, you know, Hogan gets a helping hand.
Not guilty.
Moving on to the next candidate here that was not too polarising in the feedback. Daniel Bryan is next on the list. Laz from Pro Wrestling Only says, Bryan is a face through and through. Even his heel run in ROH just led to an epic face run against Morishima. It's really hard to boo somebody his size with that much skill who just comes across so genuinely likeable outside the ring, even if he takes shortcuts and abuses the rules. Dorho5 from Pro Wrestling Only says, Bryan as a heel is a lot of fun. Bryan is an undersized underdog with a huge heart and a ton of fire was electric. Watch those tags leading up to Bryan's big run where he takes the hot tag against anyone, the Shield matches really shine through, and tell me how that guy is better as a heel. Face all the way. Wishbone from TPWW says he's the greatest underdog the WWE's had in years. Hell, I'd almost argue he's the best. If Stone Cold represented what the average Joe wished he could be, then Daniel Bryan represented what the average Joe is. Project Humanoid from F4W says, I know he's great at playing heel, but he has the same unconditional love thing going now and plays the underdog to perfection. Theo Diaz from TPWW says, maybe an unpopular opinion, but heel. I enjoyed Money in the Bank cash in, AJ Shield using early yes, Bryan, and the heel pairing with Kane much more than underdog Bryan. HBKWWF69 from F4W's back in and says, as a babyface, he knows how to make that genuine connection with people, and he's a great enough worker to where he knows how to sell and get sympathy and fire up for his comeback like few in 2015 can ever comprehend. Lockjaw from TPWW says, going to go opposite of everyone here and say heel. Sure, his face run was great, but his character as a face was kind of dull in comparison. I liked him as a slightly crazy, angry dude with a chip on his shoulder. His stuff with AJ Lee was great. His feud with CM Punk Punk was sweet, and his feud in starting a team with Kane was great. And Kira from TPWW says he's a walking wish fulfillment as much as Stone Cold was. Bryan is the physically unimposing, average-looking badass we all want to be. His struggle to the top of the card, while fumbled at times, had so many amazing moments. It takes an amazing performer to make children, old-school wrestling fans, and jaded, cynical, attitude-era-loving smarks connect so strongly to a performer's story. Foley might be the only other wrestler to even come close. Those were some of the highlights there from the feedback. We had so many that were just outright saying face, 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 face. He's the perfect modern babyface, stuff like that, to the point where he was the person with the most votes on one side of the fence of any of the eight that we're going to talk about here today. Throw it out to anybody. Daniel Bryan, thoughts?
Yeah, face for me. From his size, selling ability, the fire, with it, coupled with the size, is a massive thing. And more than anything else, he's got that goofy smile, which just, you see the real him, that charm, yeah, come through. Obviously, as a heel, being able to control the match, there's an upside to him.
Oh yeah, especially Ring of Honor.
Yeah, but as a character, there was that, I'm going to say phony, because I think that's perceived as negative, but just not as believable as in the face role for me. So yeah, face all the way.
I agree 100%. I do really enjoy his heel Ring of Honor stuff, you know.
The best in the world.
The best in the world. Some issues with some of the emailers there. He wasn't breaking any rules whatsoever. He had till five.
He just, I knew, liked, someone was going to get that.
He just liked to remind us every now and then. You know, that work was... was fantastic.
How about when he made the kick of, you know, winning matches with a small package and did the promo and said, sometimes they call me Mr. Small Package. Fucking brilliant.
He was really good. But it is the more recent face run that I tend to gravitate towards. And I think that the reason I instantly think face is because, as jaded and as cynical as I am, as you can all attest around the table, and as I'm sure many of the emailers will agree, it's the first wrestler in years felt myself genuinely rooting for someone,
connecting to someone,
yeah, as opposed to just like them saying, oh, I want, he has good matches, I like him on the mic, and that's the thing. This was just a genuine, I want this guy to succeed, I want this man to win. I was so furious. I remember, not this year's Royal Rumble, last year's Royal Rumble, when I watched a few of the matches around here with yourselves, and he was in that opener with Wyatt, mm-hmm, and he jobbed to Wyatt.
Oh yeah.
And I pretty much just sat there and sobbed for about 10 minutes.
You left the house, if I recall correctly, and didn't stick around to the end of the show.
That babyface fire as well, he's absolutely brilliant in that sense. So I do enjoy the heel work, but it is a babyface for me.
Especially in the WWE. That commanding style that he had as a heel in Ring of Honor, where he would have those matches with a Colt Cabana or a Kenta. And I do like the fact that the Morishima series got mentioned there, with the match that Bryan has as a babyface against Kenta in 2007. The ROH-driven pay-per-view,
yeah,
is the rematch from the one the year before, where Bryan is a heel in the Hammerstein Ballroom against Kenta for Glory by Honor. And it's just like those two matches are very good kind of back-to-back, because Bryan's the heel in one and a clear crowd favourite in the other. And it's just awesome to see how different he works in both. And he's just sublime in both of them. To your point, Kieran, though, when he was a heel in Ring of Honor, or even in the WWE, there would be those moments where he would be playing the character, and then you could just catch those moments where you could see he realised what he was doing was bullshit, and you would just see that little smirk kind of crack through, and he couldn't hide it that well. In ROH, it happened quite a lot.
I think I'm going to be pissing against the wind on this podcast, because I'm going to say heel. If I go for my in-ring aspect first, he's great either way. I love his stuff more recently as a babyface, the firing back, you know, the dive through the ropes, or the top rope double, you know, drop kick, kip up, you know, so just the whole sequence he does was fantastic. I'm particularly not necessarily leading up to WrestleMania 30, but kind of like before that. He was doing a lot of stuff with against the Shield and so on. He was doing
Shield 6 months every single week. It was just fucking, yeah, phenomenal.
What a glorious period. We were so, yeah, spoiled.
Yeah, yeah. It was just faultless every single time, and you were waiting for that comeback. You like, you didn't care about who else was in the match, you know, from on the opposite side of the Shield. Sorry, but until Bryan gets tagged in, because you knew the fire back was going to be fantastic. So
the man was prepared. He drew diagrams.
Yeah. Whilst I do like that Daniel Bryan from that time period, I do just love more watching Daniel Bryan work somebody over. just pick a body part, whether it's that glad someone mentioned the CM Punk series where he was a heel, which I thought was a really great series of matches, and a shame those two never really got to kind of do another program again. But also in Ring of Honor, I just loved just watching him work over a part and just being ruthless and actually kind of like subverting what he looks like, that he's just like this little guy and just actually being like a little shit, really.
But it does work better in the smaller man environment.
That's why I said in WWE, yeah, it's hard. You can't imagine doing that to many people. There aren't many people like Punk that you could get away with doing that to in WWE.
Yeah. But to your point there, G, in terms of how successful he was in that role in Ring of Honor, he made some people actually gave a shit about Delirious at one point when he was wrestling. So, you know, just goes to show the skills of the man.
It's just like I respect like what he does as a babyface, but I just preferred watching him because I know whilst he's doing that sequence, and it's kind of like every babyface has that kind of like several moves of doom, really, technically, you know, they all have that sequence that they do. Brian, I know, knows so much that I don't like seeing him being slightly restricted by being a babyface. I like the more the freedom of being the heel and controlling the match and showing more of his moveset and so on, which he did in the Punk series in WWE, which is why I liked it so much, because he kind of busted out a lot more moves that he either hasn't done before or he hasn't done since. That I always enjoy watching that Brian Moore, watching the technician at work. From a character perspective, I enjoyed his heel work in Ring of Honor. I really enjoyed his heel work from when he started doing the Yes Chant. Joins with AJ Lee, does a little bit of a Savage Elizabeth thing with there for a while. The only time in the last like several years where he's actually made Kane seem reasonably entertaining, like let's not go crazy. That dynamic was entertaining. I don't think it was entertaining for the entire Team Hell No run, but I think that initial period where they're going for like a anger management, that's it. That was just hilarious, you know. And he's just there chanting, you know, I chant yes, they chant yes, I chant no, they still chant yes, you know, and he's getting more and more pissed off of it because he doesn't understand what's going on. And it's just that character I just love. The whole no moment when he's playing that kind of shtick, I just prefer that a lot more, because whilst I did love the initial run of Yes as a babyface and leading up to WrestleMania, kind of since WrestleMania 30, the whole kind of act is starting to slightly
he hasn't been around
when he has been around.
But at the flip side too, to defend him, who is he wrestling after WrestleMania 30?
Well, yeah, I think I'm slightly over the whole Yes now. I kind of want it to move on. I kind of hope when they do bring him back, they kind of move past the Yes a little bit,
because it's guaranteed success.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. Yeah, I can see why they might want to stick with it if people are still going to do the Yes Chant. But just for me, I'm kind of like, I'm over that time period now.
I think you're being slightly cruel to him there, in the sense that the period in which you're saying you were over the Yes movement is when he has the perfect shitstorm of protecting the woman and a feud with Kane.
Yeah, that was
terrible. Which I think any babyface is going to suffer in that role.
Yeah. But when World Title feud is about Brie Bella.
Yeah, it's a problem. And I think that's why I've never been quite as high on the CM Punk Bryan feud, because it was always for a significant chunk of it was centered around AJ Lee. So I never really, whilst I enjoyed a lot of the in-ring stuff, I never held it in any particular sort of reverence. If I can just say quickly, just to your point, G, about why you appreciated him more as a heel in terms of what he could do in the ring and the limitations, I think that does partly stem from being a babyface. You do have a more simplified move set, as anyone would, for the comeback and things of that nature. But I think it's also possibly who he's now working with. You know, when you look at who he gets to work with in WWE in comparison to the multitude of talents that he gets to work with in Ring of Honor, you know, the ceiling, I would argue, is much higher in Ring of Honor for what you can do from an in-ring perspective to what he can do with the tools he's got, let's say, in WWF.
Brian's very well travelled. He's worked in multiple places, and I know he knows more. So just from a frustration point, it's like asking an artist to draw with a wax crayon, opposed to, you know, choosing what he wants to draw with. You know, it's just like I feel like they're limiting him when he could show so much more because he has the knowledge.
Can't draw with a wax on glass though. You've got to paint with the canvas you've got, and the materials that are there to paint on said canvas.
As much as the Dr. Shelby stuff, I guess if it did it for some people, that's great. But for me, it was mid-card at best, and it's like he's capable of more. It's just like balancing them up. It's like, okay, when you got heel Bryan as the world champion, he's got to play the chicken shit, pulling AJ in front of the Big Show kind of situation, which is fine, and it worked, but it worked in such a way where I got the big groundswell leading up to WrestleMania 28, which turned him babyface anyway. So contrast that to the kind of reaction that the angle got when he was in a steel cage with Bray Wyatt at the beginning of 2013, and the crowds were absolutely fucking bonkers when he got out of the Sister Abigail and just kicked the shit out of Bray Wyatt.
It's a fantastic example of crowd manipulation.
Yeah.
That the sort of the slow yes and the building up to Christian, to have the crowd in the palm of your hand like that, those aren't moments you see very often in wrestling these days at all.
Especially considering how flat the Bryan Wyatt thing felt up until that moment. It was like, oh, okay, so they haven't killed him dead. That's nice. Comes off very genuine, Daniel Bryan. I think it's a natural transition here to talk about Mick Foley, another person on our list here, because Mick Foley's another guy who has that thing, especially because, I think it's a very interesting one, because a lot of people thought this was kind of a slam dunk too in the babyface category. But when we're talking about guys and which roles they were better performers in, I think that Foley's natural characteristics in terms of promos, in terms of bumping, in terms of matches, I prefer him as a heel. Carl, you are the Foley guy around this table, so I want your take on this.
You know, in a way, I'm almost trying to make this more difficult than it really is when I look at things in the cold light of day. Because, like I mentioned there about Bryan being one of the few wrestlers that I sort of genuinely gravitate towards in sort of an emotional sense of, yes, I want this person to succeed. Foley was the person before Bryan for me in that sense. The first love, if you will, Kieran. But as much as I wanted to root for him in sort of the later years of his career, I can't deny his best work is as a heel. I don't need to go in too much detail. I've mentioned enough times about how I feel that the heel Mankind character breathed new life into the Undertaker character at a time when he was absolutely floundering. You know, when you're coming off the dog shit feud with the Million Dollar Corporation with King Kong Bundy and Kama the Supreme Fighting Machine. You know,
don't sleep on King Mabel.
Oh, well.
Is that a waterbed?
You'd have to, otherwise you might roll up. Jesus. And nobody wants that. When he's coming off such a shit run as that, it gave the Undertaker character a real impetus for the first time in almost forever. You know, you can talk about the ECW stuff, and everyone talks about the Kane Dewey promo, which is great, but I love the sort of the sarcastic elements to it as well. You know, when they used to do the Pulp Fiction quick cuts, and you've got Foley being the hardcore father, and he's on a pirate ship or something, going around, and he's just there going, he's hardcore. and the long headlocks, because it's one of those things about the ECW crowd where they're all...
Oh, here we go.
No. I'm not going to go off on too much of a tangent, but it's just, it's very difficult to get a genuine reaction from them, isn't it, I think? To get any sort of emotional reaction. So for him to be able to do it in the manner he did as the anti-hardcore wrestler, I just think was absolute brilliance. And, yeah, like I say, as much as I wanted to root for him in his early career, his best work is that sort of wild, crazy, chaotic heel.
On the flip side, though, do you think it's... I mean, and this is why I think it is a little bit more challenging with Foley. Again, similar to Flair, where as a babyface, there are some major high points that people draw to. The match with Triple H at the Rumble, the match with Orton at Backlash. Some of Foley's best promos were him as the fight, you know, that fiery babyface who's been driven to the brink, and he just lashes out, but he's hyper-intelligent at the same time. There's so many layers to Foley that it makes it an interesting debate.
There is, but the only thing I would say is, you remember in 2006... and obviously this is long past Foley's prime. Do you remember how excited we both were when you text me to say Foley's turning heel on Raw?
Yeah.
How excited we were to just picture some of the promos we were going to get. And you think about the ECW versus WWE special that they did before One Night Stand, and that promo, which I think is about eight minutes long in the ring, just when he sat in the chair with the spotlight on him.
He's got the blood coming down from his eye.
Blood coming down from his eye because he's bleeding hard way, and it's just the things I think, well, that was where I got sort of the real buzz from, I suppose.
Yeah, the promos with Flair were pretty fun as well, leading up to SummerSlam. But I think overall, though, people would look back at that heel run not that favourably.
funny you mentioned the flair thing, and I kind of what I said about the face flair almost as a result of the heel run. I almost it's a similar thing with Foley for me. That the face sympathy is almost an acknowledgement of the hard work as a heel previously. And as a body of work, and longevity absolutely is a heel. I'm going to go heel for Foley for me. Promos, I think, were more diverse. Loved the bumping style, which, you know, just adds nice little highlights in the match and nice little high points. And for me, the face, as much as I love Foley, the face shtick was kind of, I don't know, I felt it was kind of repetitive, a bit more one-dimensional than...
Especially like towards like the end of 99.
Yeah, and so... Looking as a career overall, I'd absolutely go heel.
The diversity of his promos is an interesting point, because, and you mentioned there, Carl, about, you know, the ones with the teddy bear and the ones that he can't put the pen behind his ear because he's got no ear because he's hardcore. All that stuff's great, but and obviously you got the K&G promos. One of the promos that is kind of lost in that ECW run is there's one, have you seen this, where it's the problem with being hardcore. It's one of the earlier ones after he's turned heel and he's talking about, you know, yeah, all you people who, you know, mourned for Eddie Gilbert's death, how much it was really because you couldn't see him covered in blood anymore. Or how, you know, you talk about how great the Dynamite Kid was, how many of you have given any money to Dynamite Kid? Stuff like that, yeah, and that's just clever shit.
Yeah, just much more intellectual and layered promos, whereas the face stuff, especially by the end, and the biggest face run part of his career was at the end, the maniacal anger, I just felt he went to the well doing that too often. And it was too samey a lot of the time, and as, yeah, for me, just a lot more range as a heel, despite his lovable nature. But unlike Brian, the lovable nature didn't come through in his heel work.
The thing that's interesting, though, is that when you come to like balancing out the peak of like what Foley's able to do, he was always, to me, in terms of like the major league, the big picture, was always able to get over strong as a babyface and as a heel. He didn't elicit the same high peak levels of emotion as a heel on the big stage, I don't think, that he did as a babyface. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, that's probably a fair point. He wouldn't get the chorus of boos in comparison to the cheers he got that when he finally won the big one against The Rock on that Raw. You know, the level of reactions on a sort of a decibel scale, if you like, were very different. I couldn't disagree with you at all. I think it speaks to your point a bit, though, there, Kieran, when you talk about sort of the repetitiveness, if you will, or sort of the limitations of his last year and the face run. I think it speaks to your point that he acknowledged that himself, didn't he? Right towards it. In his book, he acknowledged it himself, which is why he wanted that very last stint to be as Cactus, in his words, I believe, was to be the wild man one more time, to have that sort of bookend to his career, because he didn't want to... At that point, didn't want to just be remembered for the man who pulled the sock out of his tights.
Just in terms of, like, he knows exactly what he needs to do for either role. And this was the one who I had the most difficulty trying to decide over which one I preferred. And I think with Foley, really, because he's got, for me, personally, I think he's got the most interesting career. But there's so many dynamics, because you've got to think about his work in WCW, ECW, and WWF. WCW, I think, definitely babyface. I always think of his work with Vader in particular, just continuing to make Vader just look like a fucking beast, like just like an asshole, you know. ECW, obviously, as you guys have already stated, his heel work was fantastic. All those promos, the Kane Dewey and so on. And that's an element of what I always kind of liked about Mick, was that he really just always harnessed some sort of reality as into what he feels at that particular moment into his promos. So in ECW, a lot of those promos came from the heart, because that's how he felt. He was, I don't want to say necessarily he had a chip on his shoulder, but well, I guess he kind of did, really. He had a chip on his shoulder about the fans, and rightfully so.
He's facing the business too, subconsciously,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Absolutely. And then later on, when he's doing like the babyface shtick and he's doing all the socko, that's him as well, because he, naturally, in real life, he's a very kind of happy character. He loves Christmas and so on and so forth. So he's just being himself again, you know. So that's what he always layers realism as to how he feels at that particular time. In terms of his WWF run, you look at the multiple characters. I mean, babyface dude love was what it was. Heel dude love, there was some decent stuff there with the whole Vince angle, but you know, that's by the by. Looking at Cactus Jack and Mankind, I personally wasn't a fan of babyface Mankind, the whole Mr. Socko and everything. I can get why a lot of people was entertained by that. I didn't like that version. That's not what I wanted to see from him. Heel Mankind was fantastic. And that for me, whilst I can understand if people prefer his ECW stuff, I prefer, in terms of his heel work, him as Mankind in 96, 97 as well. I'm thinking primarily Mind Games. Just how good he was in that character, how he just completely brought himself in with the costume and everything, the performance aspect and all the little things that he added to it, like the different intro and outro music and so on. Cactus Jack, loved him as a babyface. Okay, so it's kind of like, if I narrow it down, I'm looking at either him as a heel as Mankind or him as a babyface as Cactus Jack. And for me, I'm going to piss against the wind again, and I'm going to say it's babyface for me, and it's Cactus Jack babyface. However good those promos are, the moments that always resonate with me, that I always marked out for most, is when he brings Cactus Jack back, or whatever, when it's like he brings Cactus Jack back for the first time in Madison Square Garden with Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and to fair play to Hunter, he sells it like it's fucking big, you know, he's losing his mind over it. Whether it's with Triple H again just before the Rumble, where he reveals like Mankind's not going to wrestle you, he's done. Cactus Jack coming out, and you just know like, oh, Mankind might be the masochistic one. Cactus Jack's a psycho. He's the one who will hurt you, and that's the thing. And then again with Randy Orton, even though he's billed as Mick Foley, you can get on the fuck off train. We all knew he was Cactus Jack. He came out dressed as Cactus Jack. He did all Cactus Jack stuff. He was Cactus Jack. And so just seeing that moment where, like, I don't mind funny babyface Mick, but I love it when it's like Mick goes nasty, but as a babyface, and he's like, oh, you've wronged me in some way. I'm a nice guy, but now you're being unreasonable with me, so I'm going to be unreasonable with you, so I'm going to cut you up. You know, I'm going to wrap the arm in barbed wire. I'm going to tear you apart. That's the Mick that I love. He was a nice guy who wants to be nice, but you're really making it hard for him to not be nice. You know what I mean? He's drawing that out of him. And I always think the whole stuff with the introducing Barbie and stuff, that's my favourite promo he's ever done, because when he just states, like, no one spits in my face. These guys, these honourable guys who I used to tear apart in Japan, they didn't spit in my face, but you did. So what do you think I'm going to do to you? Babyface Mick, who's going to fuck you up because you dared to mess with the nice guy.
The things that I think a lot of people think of this question, they think Mick Foley. Obviously, 2000 is such a pivotal year in terms of there's so much focus on that year, and that year is Commissioner Foley, and everyone remembers how fun and great he was as Commissioner Foley. Getting to the feedback here, Laz from Pro Wrestling Only says, Foley walked that line between smark favourite and classic worker so well that he could turn from beloved face to psychotic heel on a dime during his peak in the 90s, but his ultimate legacy is defined by what he did post King of the Ring 98 as a babyface. You can dislike him for being a whore for the business all you want, but it's hard to fault the man or his passion or his results. Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum says, the first really difficult one on the list for me. He was a beloved babyface, but his body of work as a heel, as Cactus Jack, Anti-Hardcore Jack, and Mankind is incredible. His babyface stuff came out of necessity to tone down his crazy style, and because he also had beautiful comic timing, but for years he was a genuinely convincing nutter with underrated ring work. Wishbone from TPWW says, he's like a lovable uncle, but at the same time he's also one of the baddest men on the planet, and the crazy thing is he's believable in both of those roles. Costan from the UK Fan Forum says, as a heel, he was ruthless and very believable in what he does. He came across as a psycho you wouldn't want to mess with. As a babyface, he became a parody of himself, desperately seeking the approval of the fans, looking for ways to get a cheap crowd reaction. Instead of being this psycho, he became sort of a I want to be popular comedy act. Dude, love, you've got to be kidding me.
Hit me, Steve.
I prefer the psycho Mankind when he first arrived in the WWF, unpredictable as hell. Number one WWF fan from TPWW says, face. I think it's close. His heel promos are the stuff of legend, and the only real reason I can give for choosing face is that he's the most likable wrestler ever. It's hard to ignore that. Kira from TPWW says, even if you're familiar with Cactus Jack and Mankind, everything about Foley just makes him too lovable to hate. You just want to hug the guy no matter how much he heals it up. The weird thing is he can be a really good heel. And King Lobos from WrestlingForum.com says, you can't hate Mick Foley, it's impossible. So going from a man who was universally loved in his prime to somebody who, well, was not, Shawn Michaels, let's go through some polarizing opinions here. Number one WWF fan from TPWW says his heel run pre-98 may have been better than his face run, but the stuff he did after the comeback, he was so good at drawing sympathy and playing the underdog coming back late in the match for a miracle win role that I've got to lean towards face for this one. Gorgeous Dale Newstead from TPWW says, as great as he is as a snot-nosed heel, his selling and athleticism is best displayed as a babyface driven to the brink of desperation, channeling his heart and soul to really captivate the audience. Corey Sampson from WrestlingForum.com says, I'm surprised so many people put HBK better as a babyface. I guess if you put it in a time context, it would be different too. If you asked me in 98 or 99, I would say heel without any slight hesitation. But fast forward to, say, 2005, or to his 2010 retirement, and most everybody, including myself, would say babyface. At that point, he was so well respected as a veteran, and always put on the performances of a man who saw it as his last match he'd ever wrestle. Taking a slightly contrasting opinion here, Jerry Von Kramer from Pro Wrestling Only. No-brainer, thoroughly dislikable human being, has go-away heat with me and has done since 95-96. Nikki Fives from TPWW says, coked up and pilled out asshole HBK for the win. Boy Better Know from F4W, Shawn Michaels is a natural dickhead. Him being a face at all in the 90s is beyond me. Scott Malbrank from the UK Fan Forum says, heel hands down, no doubt about it. His attitude in front of the cameras wound a lot of people up. His DX stuff had people jumping barricades at shows to swing a punch at him, and his 2005 promo in Montreal, still my favourite promo of all time, and his obnoxiously disrespectful work against Hogan. He was a nice babyface, but he was a gloriously deplorable heel. Embry Fan from the F4W board says, one of the best chicken shit heels ever, and working that style exposed less of his weaknesses, such as selling consistently, than when he played babyface. His Montreal promo against Hogan was so effective I honestly wondered whether we'd have fans trying to jump into the ring to attack him. Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum says he's brilliantly smug. He probably worked baby for most of his career between the Rockers and the God Botherer, but he was just so hateable. He also achieved something quite rare by getting over as a heel despite working like a babyface. The best examples of this are during his feuds with Diesel and Taker, where he's taking the punishment in matches as the babyface normally would for a monster heel, but the face is getting cheered because Shawn is such a dick you want to see him kick the shit out of him. I should also point out that I hated his run as Jesus' sunbeam, so I've dismissed a lot of that. And Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum wraps this part up and says, as the mortal enemy of my hero, it would be impossible for me to advocate cheering for Shawn in any case. As great as his babyface performances were, and they were amazing at times, he was just such an obnoxious and relentless antagonist. Maybe it comes down to a personal desire to see Shawn get the shit kicked out of him, but that was the emotion I recall him best eliciting for me. I was at One Night Only, and I wanted him to die. I wasn't even a massive Undertaker fan, but the Hell in a Cell match had my boxers frothing at the thought of, you're gonna get it now, you little shit. And when Taker belted him with that huge chair shot, I was overflowing with glee. Then, in a metaphor for WWE for the rest of the time, Kane came out to ruin things. Anyway, Shawn's a prick. What a fucking arsehole he was. So, there you go. A lot of visceral hatred for Shawn Michaels here.
The only way to look at it is two separate careers. The pre-4-year, in quotations, injury. And post, I mean, yeah. His overriding arrogance and cockiness, which, although I loved, because I wanted to be that guy because I'm a dick as well. He was fucking an amazing heel.
Yeah.
But when he comes back and he's the old gunslinger who, yeah, he might actually collapse and never be able to wrestle again any given match. Fantastic babyface. Was it the Survivor Series match?
Oh, 2003.
God damn, that was,
yeah, three on one down. Great blade, yeah. Job. So dramatic. Yeah,
that's Steve down.
I mean, yeah, just two different careers almost for me. The pre and post, and it's heel pre, face post. Simple.
Well, he didn't really get run as a heel in the post, which is the problem, right. Too.
Yeah, but I don't, he couldn't have done it. I don't think, well, you can't say he could have done it. He could have done it because he's Shawn Michaels, but he didn't do it. And the fact his persona changed from pre and post, it really is two different guys.
Yeah.
And it's almost the, however real or just projected it was, that's, you know, why he's such a great worker as well. It was two different personas of the, really was the cocky guy in his prime. So if you're talking about a guy in his prime, that's a controversial point in its own, because a lot of people say a better matches when he came back. I really do think it's completely divided. I think that's the only way you look at Shawn, is the persona, even as a face, suit, he needed to be a heel. He was screaming to be a heel.
Yeah.
Afterwards, when he's the old gunslinger and he's coming back, and how long has he been around for, and he's a babyface, and he's a supreme babyface at that as well. So two completely separate runs for me.
What a thoroughly articulated way to sit on the fence and not make a decision. It seems to me a lot of the dislike for Shawn, or reasons to go on the heel side, tends to be rooted more in him as a person and things outside of the ring, as opposed to what he actually brings to the table.
But you can't, wrestling, you can't deny, Carl, that when you saw him chewing his gum, you wanted to chin him.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. Yeah, he
He wanted to be one of those Marines.
Oh, absolutely.
He was doing the Shawn Michaels gum chew that the stripper told me she didn't want to dance for me because I looked so arrogant chewing my gum. So there you go. True fact.
You're absolutely right, Liam. He sort of basically brought that character to the ring in many instances, usually when he was intoxicated, let's say.
Allegedly.
For me, I've got to say babyface. Looking at the whole body of work, and Kieran's right, in 95, 96, there were instances where he screamed to be a heel, but he still, even in that time frame, has some great matches as a babyface, which I think are often overlooked because of the sort of the downside of the business, the fact they were coming off second best to WCW at the time.
Talking about matches with Jarrett and stuff like that.
Yeah, things like that, and obviously the Foley one does get mentioned. Like, the match with Vader is very good, except for the ending. I always have an issue with the way it's booked, but in terms of a lot of stuff they do in the ring, I think is very good.
Good friends, better enemies with Diesel.
Yeah, absolutely. The match with Bulldog were very good. Didn't draw, but they were good matches. And whilst his heel stuff is great, he does play the obnoxious prick really well in the DX phase. I have to look at the whole body of work, and his comeback in 2002, running through to the end of his career, he is so great as that baby face that I have to go with a face in this instance.
Do you incorporate his running in the Rockers at all, any of this, when you talk about his base? So I think the great thing with Sean, in terms of weighing this up, is that he had so many different runs and so many different roles. He was a great baby face in the Rockers. You know, him and Mike were both great, but Sean just... he's just fantastic in that team. He's just a shining diamond for me. When you watch these matches, like, man, he's just so fast, but he sells so well, he bumps so well. He's just, as a heel, mid-card heel, very good too. But one of Sean's major strengths is his flair for drama, and he does project that very well selling, and I think he did. That's why, to me, the second half of his career as a babyface stands out so much better than the first half, because in the first half, where he's the young guy and he's the heartthrob, the heartbreak kid, and there's one thing that always sticks out in my head. We mentioned the Diesel match at Good Friends, Better Enemies. There's one point in that match when Sean's on his back and he kind of raises his arm, the old Ric Flair begging off in a way, where he's like kind of like, you know, scooting himself backwards with his arm raised up, which is a typical heel thing to do in many respects. And it just looks out of place. Pretty boy Sean fighting from underneath. You can just pick... I mean, it's the reality of that Shawn Michaels got booed against Sid in Madison Square Garden. That's why that doesn't work, because there's something about it that doesn't connect. That, you know, the young, plucky... Whereas when he came back, because he was more grizzled and he did have that bit... He wasn't as...
The character's more defined and to the selling.
Yeah, exactly. It's more in tune with what Shawn's strengths are, it feels like to me, especially when you watch him in those matches with like Kurt Angle and stuff like that, where that flair for drama's there, but it doesn't come off as that thing that you can't get behind because he's a pretty boy. But then again, the flip side is when you look at his match Hell in a Cell with Taker, which I just absolutely in awe of that match. I think that match is such an incredible performance from both of them, but particularly from Shawn, in terms of just what a chicken shit, what a complete asshole, and he's just so good by that point that his bumping, everything's just completely effortless.
He is the guy that Seth Rollins wishes he could be.
Yeah, in many ways, and that's going to piss some people off, but who cares? I think it's true. To me, I understand why people would gravitate to him as a heel, because that period where the second half of 97, where the crowd was turning him anyway, especially when they're in Canada and you got the seven guys holding the sign that says HBK equals fag, you know, one letter each, and like it's in Nova Scotia where they're just chanting, you know, fag and stuff at him, and Sean is gay, and you know, Sean gets on the mic, he's like, ask your mom and your sister how gay Sean is and stuff like that. It's like people hated him. They hated him when he's a babyface, to the point where when he did turn heel, God, he just ate up the last 2 years of drug-addled frustration in one big run, and it was great. He was awesome in that run.
You're talking longevity, and he still had incredible matches as a face, which is why I worship the guy. But if I'm looking at his actual peaks, I think it would be fair to argue that his peak as a face would be afterwards, and his peak as a heel would be beforehand. So
yep.
That's my kind of fence sitting explained, and I'm not going to have to explain anything else.
Yeah, he's this is one where like either answer's is right. Basically, it's
oh, come on, people.
I'm not going to sit on the fence like here, and I'm going to give an answer, but I can just understand why, because neither answer's wrong. Like later on, he kind of slightly was heel with Hogan or something like that, and then like yeah, he was babyface in the Rockers, okay, and he was babyface, you know, in '96, which I never really kind of bought into. So it is just heel, babyface. Which one do you prefer? and I'm going to say babyface, because obviously I watched that a lot more at the time when it happened, more so than his heel stuff. If I take it from a character perspective, Sean's babyface character was a lot more honed. He was a lot more humble, or at least it comes across that way. He's a lot more humble, and you know, it's someone you could, as you said, it's the old gunslinger returning and stuff, and it was a character that you can get behind a lot better than his babyface attempt in 96. But he obviously, you could see he had a lot more fun being the dick in 97.
He was fucking wasted all the time.
Yeah. But he had a lot more fun being the dick in 97 because he had the freedom to do whatever he wants, so he could just literally throw his shit against the wall. And I think that probably on some occasions he might have actually dug deep into the nugget sack to throw something. But so from that aspect, and we were watching a little bit of Heel Sean before we started the podcast, and it is very entertaining. So I get that. There's other heels I think are better, but he is very good inside the ring. I basically prefer his work as a babyface in his second career rather than his first, because whilst, yeah, he's running around like a madman, he's doing like crazy bumps, he's hot dogging for the crowd, by the time where his second career comes about, he's a lot smarter. I don't know whether it's he necessarily doesn't feel he needs to do all that stuff anymore, or that he knows he doesn't need to do all that stuff anymore, that he can be a lot more subtle, he can work a lot smarter, protect himself a lot more, and still get the same response. It's a smarter Sean. That's all I kind of see through this, through his first career, is whilst he's good and talented, he's a child. He's a child given keys to, you know, the chocolate factory, you know, and he's just doing whatever he's want. The second career, he's a lot smarter. His series with Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, his retirement match, the retirement match with Ric Flair, which whilst may not have been a great match, the emotion standpoint of it, of how Sean worked it with Rick, is absolutely staggering at times when I've watched it. Obviously his great series with Undertaker,
and of course it's natural now to move on to his arch rival during his first run, Bret Hart. We'll talk about him a little bit first. Again, to me, this was one of the more obvious ones when we were kind of weighing this up. I was kind of surprised in the feedback, which we'll get to shortly, about how many people were in favour of Bret as a heel over a babyface. But to me, Bret's like one of the definitive babyfaces in WWF history in terms of performances and ability and things like that. Just, oh God, what can you say about Bret Hart? I mean, just the most fantastic guy for me in terms of working underneath, master psychologist as a babyface. I don't think that he was as strong a psychologist as a heel as he was as a babyface. I think that he understood the way that you could sympathize with him in failing, especially as he was coming up, when he would lose big matches, but only by a cunt hair. And it would be something like when he finally starts climbing the ladder, it's like you have a natural... you gravitate naturally to wanting to see Bret do well. And there's this, when I think about all the matches where Bret's just so great selling subtly, he's the opposite of Sean in many ways, in the sense of Sean's, especially in that first run, it was bigger, it was broader, it was the faster pace, the quicker bumps. Bret would not do anything at that kind of blistering pace.
Just the subtle open mouth,
yeah,
gasping for air style is what I just...
yeah, the clutching at his chest when he takes the chest first thing into the buckles. The way that if he's selling the knee, like the Royal Rumble 94, man, he doesn't let up. It's constantly. He does change the way he works according to a knee, you know, according to, you know, a knee injury. Take note, Dean Ambrose. Things of that nature where, you know, bit by bit, block by block, so important. We see when you watch Bret Hart as a babyface, what happens at 3 minutes in has an effect at 6 minutes in, it has an effect at 12 minutes in. And I love watching that about a babyface, because in most cases, as you mentioned, G, babyfaces can be patterned and formulaic. And Bret had his sequences too, but he always adjusted. He adjusted when to put the pieces in according to what felt best. And I just think he got the most out of so many different guys that as a babyface, I think he's, as a worker, almost peerless.
It's the grounded nature of Bret's matches, if you like, in comparison to the flamboyance of Sean, isn't it? That's why they're sort of they're so diametrically opposed in that sense. I'm completely with you on this. I can understand why some emailers or some people may go for the heel run towards the end of his WWF run, because I must admit, I got one hell of a kick out of that and really enjoyed that period of time when they're crisscrossing between the States and Canada. And Bret, I think, it's almost like he finds an extra gear from the promo side of things with the anti-America stuff. But like you say, when it comes to the work as a babyface, and I think he is the premier storyteller of his generation. I don't think anyone tells a story in the ring like Bret Hart does. I think you're absolutely right. He is peerless in that regard. And I just, when I think of Bret, as much as I enjoyed the anti-America, pro-Canada feud and all that that entailed, and the way it helped make Austin a star and gave the company some impetus at a time when it was floundering, when I think Bret, I think the babyface run. I think the world the world title runs. You know, when he beats Flair and you get the promo, the biggest dreams can still come true. And the reaction he gets when he wins the IC belt from Perfect, and he's hugging his, you know, when he goes up to the up through the crowd in Madison Square Garden to hug Stu and Helen.
Poor Lord Alfred Hayes cuts off Stu.
Well,
prick.
Less said about that piece of shit, the better. But yeah, I just think there's no one of his time period who was as good at telling the story of a babyface in the match. And I think, to your point, when he works as a heel, the psychology is not quite there. He's still very good, but the psychology is not there, and there's a few, I don't really want to say shortcuts, it seems like the wrong word to use, but there's less of the psychology and there's a little bit more of the brawling, a little bit more of the formulaic, maybe a low blow here or there, you know, sort of atypical things you get from a heel, whereas the drama you get in a Bret Hart fighting from underneath match, I just think it's better. There's no other word I can think of to describe it. It's just better than his heel work in from an in-ring perspective.
Bret's kind of like a fine wine. I always kind of find, like, just like I enjoyed watching him when I was a kid. And I kind of enjoyed watching him when I first got back in. But the more and more I watch him, and the more you kind of get into the knowledge of wrestling and so on, the more you notice of the subtleties. You mentioned like the slightly open mouth and stuff. And yeah, when I was thinking about Bret Hart, it was just like, it was an obvious choice as well. But then I thought, like, no, I'm going to give this some thought. And I thought about that heel run. And the more I thought about it, I almost convinced myself to go heel with him. Because what was so great about that heel run is, and again, like, a bit like with Mick Foley, because all the intelligent people know how to do this, is he grounds it in reality of how they personally feel. So a lot of the stuff that Bret said, Bret doesn't necessarily hate America, but a lot of the kind of almost the crybabiness of the character was actually him at the time, like the kind of the problems that he had, the counterpoint to Shawn Michaels were just emotions that he was now allowed to express through a microphone on TV, and that's when, like, Bret, I felt, from a promo perspective, not just necessarily got a re-release of life in it, but just like that's when he really got his ground, because it just felt like suddenly, like, oh, okay, no, he can talk. He, you know, he can actually convey stuff and be a really good heel. Like this kind of asshole crybaby, and bringing his family all together, that kind of angle where he gets Owens crying and stuff, and Bulldog's like, no, we're family, you know, they're trying to tear us apart, we got to stick together. And it's just like, yeah, all the stuff he did during that time period, it's just a shame it didn't last longer to see, like, where he could have gone with it, because I think he certainly... There's a lot more room for him. I don't think he was going to be limited in that role. I think he would have developed in time, because it had been a while since he'd been a heel, because last time was when he was in the Hart Foundation. So I think it would have taken him just a little while to really find his mark, and in particular when he's in a system which has Shawn Michaels, you know, eating up the scenery. And so I almost convinced myself that that's the way I should go, and then I just remembered, no, it's babyface, Hart Foundation, fantastic, beats Perfect, thank you, wins the world title, the matches, whether he's, and it's little subtle things where he's helping his opponents out in matches with Roddy Piper or Bulldog or Owen Hart, the little subtle things he does to help those opponents out, Diesel, because some people just say he's just a plain babyface. You go, no, he wasn't a plain babyface, he was the right type of babyface, the guy you can get heat on. For me, he brought out, or gave the opportunity to get the best out of, Jerry the King Lawler and Stone Cold Steve Austin in those two programs, where it's like those two are great because they had someone like Bret to work with, who was the great counterpoint for those two assholes, who are assholes in completely different ways. I always enjoy watching a Bret Hart match and everything he does. And you know, he had, like we've stated before, he had his moves of doom or whatever. You know, he had, you know, the elbow drop, the side Russian leg sweep, so on and so forth. But just the way Bret did it, it was never boring. It was always exciting to see, or like how it was going to come across. And the main thing as with him as a babyface, which I love more than anything else, was that his finishes were never predictable. Unlike where you get today, where it's always RKO, FU. He didn't always win with the sharpshooter. Sometimes it would be with a small package. Sometimes it would be, you know, like the Piper or Austin finish with, like, you know the roll up from a submission hold. He always tried to come up with something different, and that's what I loved about Bret. He never made it boring.
He said it a couple of times, G, for me, and it's the word subtle, and he was just subtly brilliant. But I think that's why, for me, he has to be a babyface. Whether it's the personality or, you know, the selling as a face, it just works so much better as a babyface. Although I really enjoyed the heel run with the Harts, he's struggling at the start of it. He does grow into it, and I think you said it would be interesting to see how it would have developed. I think it would have struggled. I think he was playing off what was real there, you know, the real emotions he had, and I think in terms of range as a heel, I think that's when he may have been a bit exposed. Obviously, you know, sort of hypothetical, and he was growing into it, and you could see him coming out, bringing it out of himself. I just thought, you know, as an in-ring style, his in-ring strengths, which everyone's mentioned, and the subtle personality, he had it down perfectly for him. Babyface all day for me, for Bret.
Yeah, well, almost the very definition of a babyface you can live and die with when he's wrestling is fantastic. And Bret's such a good babyface that, as a matter of fact, I'm going back to school for computer graphics.
Son of a bitch. And it was me, I was going to settle on the Bret.
Get into the feedback here. Call Me Bellen from the UK Fan Forum says, "Face, I've met more people who haven't watched wrestling in years who ask about Bret and tell me he was their favourite than anyone else. Bruce Buchanan from F4W says, fans respected him so much that he almost had to be a babyface. Much like Daniel Bryan a generation later, he made a slow climb to the top, seemingly against long odds, and people connected with that. It's much harder to turn a guy heel when the fans respect him as it is when they just like him or even love him." Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum says, "Yes, I'm biased, but this guy's a fucking hero. I can't overstate how good the end of the Survivors match in 1990 is, where Bret fights back from 3-1 down to close in on what would be a huge upset for one half of the tag team champions to actually pin the Million Dollar Man. He falls me off the backslide. He falls me off the O'Connor roll. He falls me off the schoolboy after Virgil takes a tumble. I'm sure he's gonna beat the bastard. Then he gets beat. The guy just had a knack for making me want to see him win. Whether it was knocking off a smug tosser like Mr. Perfect, or struggling to beat a beast like Bam Bam or Yoko, I always wanted Bret to win in the end, and that stays with you." Gorgeous Dale Newstead from TPWW says, "Straight man, down the line babyface who treats it like a real competition. He's willing to get salty when need be, but shows good sportsmanship with a mild pissed off streak when things get heated or personal. See his losses to DiBiase, Bulldog and Owen, where he gets caught in quick pins and visibly mouths fuck to the camera and sheer authentic disappointment." Actually, my favourite one of them is the Saturday night's main event match with the Rockers, where the match is just the shits because the top rope broke, and Sean pins him, or Marty pins him, I think it's Marty pins him, and you just see the look on Bret's face like someone just shit on his bed, and he just looks so unhappy. He's like, fuck, that's terrible. It's great. Anyway, back to Gorgeous Dale. "When he gets rolling and hits his trademark moves, his fire is real and he becomes the excellence of execution after minutes of brilliant, gritty selling, getting the fans salivating for his comeback. Seaford from WrestlingForum.com says, Hart's heel turn in 97 was great, and his subtle smile after embracing Davey Boy and Owen on Raw was an absolute classic. To me, it was much more compelling than the underdog character he normally played. Jorgavan21 from Wrestling Forum says, heel, the Weiner gimmick fit him well, ironically. K22 from F4W says, I was watching a couple of heel promos Bret did in 97. While he had the tendency to ramble, he had this weird sort of singing cadence to his promos. You believed every single word he said, mostly because he did. It's a shame that run only lasted for 8 months. The Condor from TPWW says he wants to be the conquering hero because it seems like kayfabe and real life are blurred in his world, and his 97 run was his most entertaining, so I'll go heel. Not J-Tab from Pro Wrestling Only, though, says the thing with heel Brett is that for most of the world, he never actually turned heel after WrestleMania 13. The Hart Foundation's anti-US rhetoric kept him faced with the rest of the world. You can see how popular they were in Canada at the Canadian Stampede, and we're still getting cheered in Europe by mid to late 97. And Dorho5 from Pro Wrestling Only, wrapping up the Brett feedback, says Hart is a very interesting case to me. Even when he was playing the bad guy, Brett was playing the good guy. He was still the exact same Brett Hart he had always been, just the circumstances had changed. It almost makes him a better heel to me, in that most bad guys in real life would view things very much the same way Brett did. What is wrong with these people who have such a problem with me? I'm just doing what's right like I always have. My personal preference is Brett as a face, but even then he has a lot of arrogance in his wrestling style that kind of heels him out. It's as if he's so convinced that he's the hero that he becomes the asshole. So I'm going to say heel.
Was that Shawn Michaels right here?
The Brett role was so good because, as you said, like in Brett's mind, he was still the babyface. He never turned heel. It was the fans that turned heel on him. And so everything he was saying, he was well, I'm right, aren't I? I'm being reasonable here, you know. I should be right to be pissed off or something.
It's true, but he also did pretty much told the USA fans to
kiss his ass. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, watch him walk back from the ring after WrestleMania 13 and gives the fan the finger to his face, which is glorious. And one little thing that sticks in my mind is on Shotgun Saturday Night, Brian Pillman's first match back in the WWF after the injury, where he beats like some jobber with a neck breaker. And Bret Hart's at ringside, like the godfather of the group, on crutches. It's hilarious. And some fans are giving him shit in the front row. And the camera just zooms in on Bret's face. He just gives that kind of usual bemused half-smile Bret Hart look. And Bret just mouths, like, get a toothbrush. Makes a difference. In this Bret way. And it's just brilliant. I can't do it justice because it's Bret's voice. And moving along to the final of the eight people we're going to talk about today, Kurt Angle. This actually, if I'm not mistaken, Kim, when you texted me this idea and you told me that Tim R had got in touch with you to do this, this kind of riffs off the discussion we had on the SummerSlam show a few weeks back, the best SummerSlam matches in history. We were talking about Steve Austin versus Kurt Angle, a match which was absolutely fantastic, but there's that thing niggling in the back of your mind that both guys are in the opposite role than you would typically like to see them in, miscast. So I don't think I'm going out on a limb too much here by saying you're leaning towards Kurt Angle heel.
Yeah. I thought, in principle, Kurt could have been a massive babyface, but that inherent wackiness...
And you can't get past it.
No, and the early portrayal of him with the wacky, as a wacky character, was always there for that. As much as a badass as he is, the wackiness is always there. And
the real downside of bringing him with that gimmick.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was never able to recover from that. Really, I mean that match with Austin was. I said I went into it just thinking, oh god, this is so miscast. But he was fucking phenomenal as a babyface.
Oh, he's brilliant.
I mean, he was like all worldly performance. And Austin too, if we do another one of these shows, I'm sure we'll talk about Austin. But just the inherent almost restrictions that the character was placed upon him, and probably his own sense of humour and wackiness and willingness to do stuff as well, despite being an actual badass, it's the badass teamed with the wackiness that's made him a heel. Yeah. And look at how many fucking amazing matches he had as a heel. It's, you know, hard to argue, I think.
It's just that thing that because he was so wacky at first, that it's like that kind of, it becomes a crutch.
Yeah.
That thing's like, okay, we know he's a great wrestler, he's getting awesome, but you know what? Kurt Angle's capable of making everybody laugh, and let's get some comedy in there. Kurt can do this, and it won't hurt him too much.
Yeah, this along with Foley was the other one I was kind of going back and forth on. I had to think of different parts of his career, and I'm not going to include TNA.
TNA,
I think he's underappreciated at just how good he is as a character, or playing a character. How, as you said, how funny he is, how good an actor he can be at certain stuff. This guy is very underappreciated as to how funny he can be. And in terms of a babyface, I think, you know, he's had some decent runs here and there. I didn't necessarily get behind the invasion stuff when he's babyface. I kind of struggled because he was very goofy at that point. I kind of got more behind a babyface Kurt in like 2002, when he was very briefly a babyface. Yeah, end of the year when he first wins the title. It's very brief. It's a very brief moment.
It's about 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. It's very brief. But like those kind of like moments where he was kind of getting cheered before he ends up with Team Angle, and then after Team Angle as well. There were kind of moments where he was a good babyface because they went along the more serious shtick of being, you know, a badass. The heel persona, though, is hilarious or great. Whether he's playing a badass heel and he's going after somebody, he's great. When he splices in a bit of humour, whichever way it is, whether it's the whole milk drinking, three eyes, intensity, integrity, intelligence, it's true, whatever, it's all funny. Or whether he's doing something where he's mocking someone. We've talked about him and Shawn Michaels, the sexy Kurt. Anything they give him, a cowboy hat, whatever, Kurt makes it funny because the persona is he's supposed to be serious. He's an Olympic gold medalist who won the gold with a broken freaking neck. And yet you can find the comedy from it because it's a serious guy being taken the piss out of or taking the piss out of himself. And that's where kind of like a lot of that humour derives. And I don't think it's detrimental to him as a heel. Every moment I can think of, you were kind of miming off off Mike. Just one moment just made me laugh when he actually splits from Team Angle because Team Angle think that they should be in charge now. Because he's kind of failing.
After
Kurt's comeback. And Kurt just decides, like, well, okay, let's make a decision because I'm the leader, right? So I'll do the executive decision. And no, you're not going to be in charge. And he goes, actually, I'm going to fire you. Get out of here. And he just goes this over the top, like trying to get him out of the ring. And I can't really describe it to you what he does.
It's the baseball. It's the baseball kicking dirt on people.
Yeah. Kind of like almost like he's trying to give him a dead leg, and he's just going nuts on Shelton. And Shelton doesn't know what to do. Shelton's just looking at him confused, and I'm crying with laughter. It just makes me laugh. That's what Kurt does. He just makes me smile every time. Heel babyface. He's just entertaining.
What it is for me as well, it's the cadence in his voice. I don't think it's not made as a cool face.
No, not at all.
Even when he's positioned as a badass, when he speaks, the wackiness comes through.
Yeah, it's like the way his voice is pitched,
right? Like the inflection in his voice.
That's the word.
So I think that's always, it always held him back. Like he's a badass, but he was a goofy badass. And even when he was a face, and then that held him back from being being able to become a tippy-top face because he wasn't able to transition from goofy to cool. He's not a cool guy.
No.
He's a wacky badass, and that's just suited to the heel persona.
He has that great match with Shawn Michaels, the great build-up with Shawn Michaels, where he gets to show how good he is in that few-month stretch. And then they put him in with fucking Booker T the month afterwards with the I Want to Have Sex With Your Wife promo, which, again, it's like, that's supposed to be...
Bestiality sex.
Yeah, it's supposed to be creepy, but it's just hilarious coming out of Kurt Angle's mouth, inadvertently so. In terms of working the ring, you're right, G, I think he's very good in either role, but I do prefer him as a heel. Again, that dictating the pace, he's very... the aggression, he's a perfect base for... so many different styles, a Mysterio, a Benoit, a Michaels. There's just so many good examples you can draw. Rock, even. I think him and Rock had underrated chemistry. No Way Out 2001 being a particular example. No Mercy the previous year as well. He's a great base for a variety of different guys, which I think speaks to his ability.
He is just generally an all-round great performer. I think the interesting thing with Kurt is he very quickly, in sort of the grand scheme of things, very quickly translated into one of those people that, whether he was cast as face or heel, fans wanted to cheer for him. A bit touching a bit on what Jerry Von Kramer said about Ric Flair, in the sense of Kurt was so good in the ring that fans just naturally they cottoned on and gravitated to him. I mean, the Shawn Michaels one is a good case in point. It's WrestleMania in LA. LA's not really known for its smart mark crowd. It's not really known for its cheer the heels, boo the face thing. But you can sense that the crowd just appreciate how good he is, and the audible cheers he gets in the match with Michaels. And it's difficult in that sense because he very quickly became someone that people just wanted to cheer, regardless of circumstances. To your point in terms of the way you can dictate a match as a heel. And the way that, to Kieran's point, the wackiness, the wacky heel, just is more naturally him. Like you say, he attempts the sort of the badass nature. It doesn't translate quite as well. Like we talked about the way the feud with Austin is miscast. And whilst he's absolutely brilliant that night at SummerSlam, as a babyface, he's fantastic on that night. The promos he cuts in the build up, where he's talking about how I'm a better competitor than you and all these sort of things, it comes across as sort of this, I want to say almost comical, it's almost disingenuous in the sense, because you see the look, but you see the look on his face and the way he's sort of like doing this baby face spiel, and it's like, doesn't come across poorly, don't get me wrong, but it's just, it's not quite there. It doesn't click quite as well as the smug, wacky heel that he can be. And for that reason, I've got to agree with yourselves and go with Kurt as a heel.
Yeah, I echo that. I just remember there's like an episode of SmackDown that for some reason just jumped into my head in 2001, that feud with Austin, where he's a babyface doing a promo, right? Like you said, that comedic thing is just coming out of him, but the weird thing is the crowd is laughing at him like a stand up comedian. It's just so for some reason that always just kind of stuck in my mind. The other thing that sticks in my mind with him as a heel, that the white bread schmuck heel, is the interview with The Rock, but it's actually not The Rock, it's like taken from different clips. Rock's promos.
That was before the No Mercy match. Before he wins the belt,
and it's just angled just like that straight face, like, what a cruel sad man. It's just fucking great.
I was just saying, and the sleazy element in 2000 with Triple H and Stephanie as well. He pulls that off so well.
And let's not forget the angle charge.
Oh yeah, that's one of the great things I love about him as a heel, is where at random points he'll just like full on sprint and usually get drop toe holded and just take a great bump on his face. He'll
fly through the ropes. Can't do that as a face. But it's, even then, it's like fantastic and it's aggressive, but it's the wacky nature to it.
I'm sitting here laughing off my, just thinking about random Kurt Angle things. Like there's a match with him and Mysterio on a SmackDown where he slaps me in the face, he sells it, he staggers back, and Kurt's like holds his hand to his face, looks around, realizes it is in public, and just looks around and goes, "You son of a bitch," and chases him around the ring. It's like, this is just ridiculous. Yeah,
you got the wacky stuff in the feud with Edge as well, when he's looking at the photos. And the facials, that are so great. Yeah. The wacky heel, it just works. Even to the point where that wackiness transcends everything almost, when you get to the point where he's a baby face and he's going along with the "You Sucks" chant with the crowd, and it's just...
I didn't like that.
I wasn't the biggest fan of it, but it just, this wacky side we're talking about, to me, that sort of almost encapsulates it.
Yeah, it's just when you mentioned 2002 Kurt, just when he's got the toupee on with the freaking sports headgear. He's got the toupee with the sports headgear on, trying to hold it in place. Or just when you mentioned Rey Mysterio, No Mercy, I think it's No Mercy 2002, where he does the initial lockups with Rey, and he's like basically just beating the shit out of him, and then Ray finally gets one up on him and he does like a drop toe hold on him, and
one.
Kurt just smacks his face on the, and just he smacks his face on the mat, and then he just holds his hand to his face going, "Oh!" It's just the funniest thing. Every time I watch it, I just watch it for that moment, because it's just fucking hilarious. It's just, "Get back in here!" Ray bails, he's like, "Get back in here!" And he's bending on all fours going, "Get back in here!"
You can't say, no matter what he does, you just think about these isolated moments of just comedy that come through naturally. Yeah. But where it does,
he's a funny guy.
He's a funny guy, but he was great as a serious wrestler too, don't get me wrong. He didn't have to do that, that's the beautiful thing. There are matches where he doesn't have any trace elements of that. WrestleMania 17 with Benoit is a good example, where he's just straight ahead. I like that match a great deal. Just to get some feedback here, Batco 10 from Wrestling Forum says, "From the traditional perspective of the heel and face, the heel should be despised and hated by the fans. While their heel personas were credible, the problem is that Rock, Foley and Flair were always well liked by the fans, even as heels. In my opinion, Kurt Angle was genuinely hated by the fans, who delighted in constantly mocking him. Angle definitely is better as a heel." Scott Malbrank from the UK Fan Forum says, "Heel. He was a tremendous comic relief cowardly heel when he debuted, and his segments with Austin and McMahon speak for themselves. But that seamless transition he made from comedy character to completely legitimate, believable killing machine was amazing. I loved his face when joining the invasion, when he showed a serious set of bollocks, but he was ultimately playing a heel, being cheered by default, given the situation. Lord of the Drums from F4W says, he was a great heel at times, but sort of like Flair, he was so damn good at what he did, you always wanted to cheer him. Noid from TPWW says, this is one of the trickier ones. Sometimes I felt like cheering the hell out of Angle, but other times I felt he needed to tear people apart. I think an underrated Angle is heel wrestling machine Angle, who would get cheered because everybody knew how good he was. I guess he was all around more entertaining as a heel, although he had plenty of hilarious moments as a babyface too. Retip Adam from Wrestling Forum says, he was a heel that people loved to hate, that I guarantee you, if he returned today with his old entrance theme, fans would still chant "You Suck" as a sign of endearment. Smelly Meatball from TPWW says, babyface, one of the very few who could pull off doing comedic stuff really well and still manage to look like a legit threat whenever in the ring. Until Dawn from Wrestling Forum says, heel. The fans hated him so much they made up a chant for him. Lecter Yo from Wrestling Forum says, heel as well. Not the later bald heel Angle, the original corny, arrogant, dumb Angle. One of the greatest characters ever. The guy was a better wrestler than anyone in the company. He was a true American hero, and he still made people hate him. And finally, Jackpot from the UK fan forum says, from his debut when he let rip on the crowd for booing him to now, he's always been a quality heel, and a comical heel at that, rather than the usual shit that you get. He should have been the biggest babyface going, coming in as a genuine gold medalist from the Olympics, and yet still got over as a heel. His ring work had that extra intensity as a heel as well, and I think that's kind of the clincher for me. That intensity he had as a heel was really good, especially in the late stages of a match. Man, he was dynamite.
I just remember another moment of his. Just, I think it's a, if I remember, I think it's at One Night Stand, the first One Night Stand where he's part of the Invasion crew. And he's about to get on the mic, and I think he's topless by this point. He's taking a SmackDown t-shirt, and the crowd are just chanting, you suck at him. And he just turns, he's so frustrated, he just turns to him and goes, your mother taught me how. And yeah, he just looks so pissed off with it. It just made me laugh again. Just his face, he's just looking at him.
So many great moments. This has been a lot of fun looking back at these different guys and their face and heel incarnations. If you like this show, we will do a second part in the future with 8 different guys and put them in there under the microscope, if you will. So with that said, that is it for this week. If we didn't get to your feedback on anybody this time, we apologise. We had so much to get to. I should note at this point that we will be absent for the next 2 weeks as I'm going away to sunny Florida, but we will be back in a few weeks' time with the next instalment of the Monday Night War timeline. Looking at the third quarter of 1997. So a lot of notes. Obviously, we have the timeline from the Wrestling Observer newsletter there as well. The notes from Dave Meltzer's Observers at the time. So that's going to be a lot of fun. In the meantime, while we're gone, you can go back and listen to the archives, of course, at squaredcirclegazette.com. You can listen to our previous episodes of the Monday Night War timeline that we've done, as well as last week's Trial of Hulk Hogan and the previous ones we've done there. We will be back in a few weeks. Thank you very much for listening. For G. John Chase.
Thanks.
For Carl Jones.
Remember, you can follow me on Twitter at oldmanjones85.
And for Kieran O'Rourke.
At Wrestling Prophet, it's a way to influence this show.
I am Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here. See you in a few weeks.